Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Everybody, welcome to the podcast. I have the pleasure of sitting here with my brother. I'm going to roll off a couple of numbers that you guys may know. He's a 10-time All-Star. He's a 3-time Olympic gold medalist. We'll talk about the other one as we go on. He's an NCAA champion. He's one of the coolest mofos that I know. Everybody call him Carmelo Anthony that don't know him, but if you do know him, he's the peace guy. Everybody, welcome my brother Melo to the podcast.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Peace.
Peace, God.
Peace, God.
Peace, God.
Hey, peace, yes.
Appreciate you, my guy. You know that.
Love, man.
Anytime.
So I wanted to start this podcast because I wanted to have conversations with people that I admired, people that I love to learn from, people that are my friends, are my brothers. So I appreciate you taking the time. You know, we've had many conversations.
Easy money right here.
But
easy.
But I think, you know, we do a lot of interviews, and some of the questions could be the same. But when you're talking to someone who knows you or seen you in certain situations in life, the answers are different.
Facts.
And so to start this podcast off, I want to go back to the beginning. I want to go back to the Melo that I didn't get to meet. I want to go back to young Melo. So who was like young Melo, like that Melo that was in B-more, that was in Brooklyn,
yeah,
for the basketball that we all knew you for?
I was just a kid, you know what I mean? I was a kid in Red Hook. You know, Red Hook at that time was, we're talking 80s, you know, mid 80s, yeah, late 80s, early 90s. So that, you know, it was very community oriented, right? It was the projects, you know, it was gatherings. It was everything was, every building did things together. Like, it was real community oriented. And as a kid, you looked up to that. You look forward to that. You know what I mean? Every year, every summer, you have your Red Hook Day, your Paradise mm-hmm. Day, and everybody coming together, and there's music in the park, and there's cookouts, and there's food, and there's basketball games. And so that became what I was looking forward to. Like, yeah, you wanted to be known for that. At that point in time, like, I got to be known for the best in the games on Red Hook Day and things like that. So as a kid, I already had that mentality. My brother played, you know, my cousins played.
Was your brother nice? Or
my brother was a real deal, man. Now, I always give him his credit, man. I like, always give him his flowers, you know what I'm saying? Because my brother was the heart and soul of Red Hook, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. in Brooklyn. So my family, we lived, as soon as you walk in the building, 79 Lorraine Street, 1C, we was the first apartment that you had to go through to get to any other apartment in the building, mm-hmm. and to the steps. So we really ran the actual, we was the gatekeepers of the actual building. But my family was big in the projects. Yeah. You know, we was like one of the staple families in the projects. So it was always just love, community. And that's what I grew up in. And then I moved to Baltimore the summer of 92. And I thought the grass was greener on that side. Well, my mother.
You were born in what, 84, 85?
I was born in 84.
Okay, so you were
May 29th, 1984. I moved to Baltimore summer of 92.
Yeah.
And I was hurt.
Yeah.
Hurt.
Wait, and you, so we have, you were raised by your mother.
I was raised by my mom. My dad passed when I was two, right? So I was raised by my mom,
yeah.
my brother, sister, that side of the family. But I was always involved on my other side, with my sisters on my dad's side.
Yeah.
So they used to take care of me, but my dad had a blended family. He's Puerto Rican, man. He's like, hey, everybody's under one roof over here. You know what I'm saying?
So you got a sense of family.
But even though him and my mom wasn't together, we still had that. It was just that family. Like, he come to the door with my sisters and, what we doing?
Yeah.
Mira. What we doing? So that was the environment.
Mira.
But that was the environment. Then we have family in Baltimore that we used to go down in the summer, you know, take those trips down in summer in the South and things like that. And then my mom was like, yo, we going down there to spend this summer. And never came back. I was hurt.
Man, it's like, you know, when you're a kid, right, and you got to move, you got to uproot, you got to go. It's the little things. You're like, man, my bike, my homies, you know, my this, my that. And, you know, you feel like everything is like, they're just taking everything away from you. Everything that you knew, you know.
Bro, I was just thinking about friends.
Yeah.
I was thinking about, like, growing up in that environment. Like, who I was going to be, you know, friends with growing up. This was going to be my crew growing up. Like, you know what I mean? As a kid, you 8, 9 years old.
Yeah.
These are the things you just starting to find out. You're starting to gather your friends. You feel like you realize who are your close friends and where friends, you know, who does what and putting the team together. That's when all of that mindset actually starts. So I was just leaving that at that point in time, going to Baltimore.
Going to be more.
So I was established. I already established it, but I didn't get a chance to play it out in Red Hook.
And was it because of like a career? Was it your mom moving because of career moves?
Nah, hell no. Nah. Hell no. Nah. Mom was like, you know what? Red Hook is crazy.
Yeah.
Listen, we're going to shoot down there for the summer and just get away from Brooklyn for a minute.
Okay.
And she loved it. You know what I mean? She had aunts and sisters and brothers already down there. You know, my brothers was already moving, you know, back and forth down there anyway. Yeah. So at that point, it was like, man, I'm the child that don't got a voice. I got to go.
Nah,
I ain't going. I'm not going.
So outside of basketball, which we going to get to, we'll cover a lot of basketball, but tell me something else that young Melo did. Like, you know, I've heard a little bit, you know, you said a couple things, like, you know, I've watched you. I've watched you when you got paper in front of you. Doodle a lot.
yeah, of course.
Like, what else did young Melo
do? I was called, my name was Cello, right?
Okay.
Nobody knows that.
Cello.
Right? Cello. That was my name in Red Hook. Everybody called me Cello, right? You know, I guess it was Melo, Cello, Goodfellas. You know what I mean? Hip-hop was big back then, so they called me Cello. People in Red Hook called me Cello. So I was Cello to people in Red Hook.
Okay.
You know, if you went back and be like, Melo, it's like, this is Cello. Right.
Yeah.
So I never understood where that name came from. Anyway, I was in Baltimore, and I was known as Little New York.
Okay.
Right? So, okay. I came down with the, you know, with the Anthony Mason in the back, like, New York, little New York in the back of my head, and my haircut.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's what I was on. I was into graffiti and art, and I used to get in trouble in school for drawing sneakers on the desk and cartoon characters and tracing. I had tracing books. So I used to do all that. I was a kid. I did everything a kid did. I played with toys. You know, my buddies, the Black My Buddy was one of my.
Not the Black My Buddy.
The Black My Buddy was my man. Like, you know what I'm saying? I had the wrestling, the WWF, the wrestlers. I love wrestling.
Yeah.
My mom is a diehard wrestling fan. So I used to tape my bunk beds like the ring and jump off the top bunk to my brother's bed and while he's sleeping, you know what I mean? Like it's...
Oh, you got a lot of weapons then, bro. Your mom ain't tell you?
I stayed in a room with my older brother. He had his own bed. It was bunk beds. My other brother just was on the top.
Yeah.
And then me and my cousin on the bottom bunk. So it's four of us in the square.
Yeah.
We got to make something happen. Like I'm the one that's just laughing there. You know what I mean? I'm jumping from bed to bed to bed to bed. But I was... When I got to Baltimore, to answer your question, man, I used to love drawing, paint. You know, I never paint. I just never understood painting. Nobody showed me how to paint. But right. I know drawing and being creative, like understanding, just taking something and being able to break it down and put something around it and tell a story. But I had that.
So it was an outlet.
It was an outlet. I had that as a little kid. Like I always had the vision of like, damn, if I was to do that, then I would do it like this. Like I was always thinking like that as a kid.
So you were storytelling.
I was storytelling. Like yeah. I already had in my mind things that I would do when I was playing Little League football. Like,
yeah.
You know, it was already like in my mind, that story mm-hmm. was already told.
Mm-hmm.
If I did it and if I didn't do it,
yeah.
I had a story for that too.
You know, I think that's one thing that's important for, let's just say athletes or young individuals that definitely come from the same community, the jungle where we come from, right?
Facts.
Is understanding that we are storytellers because we have to create our own life in our mind. We have to close our eyes and put ourselves somewhere or envision ourselves somewhere. We create our own stories. And so we have a skill set of storytelling that we never tap into.
Naturally.
To be able to accomplish the things that we accomplished to get to where we are, we had to see it and we had to tell ourselves that story. No one told us.
We're naturally gifted, right? We're naturally gifted, right? To your point, we are storytellers. Everything that we ever lived, experienced is a story.
Mm-hmm.
We tell those stories. Mm-hmm. So naturally we're a storyteller. We can look at somebody and understand the story without us even having any dialogue. You can look at somebody's eyes and understand what they're going through, right? Mm-hmm. You can see somebody disposition and aura and energy and understand what they're going through. So yes, we are naturally storytellers, but because nobody ever compounded on that, hey, you can be, oh shit, you can be
right,
that.
Right.
We got shot down. Boy, get out of here. Get the fuck out of here. Nobody, why are you drawing that? It's like you got rid, you know, you got penalized for being creative,
mm-hmm.
you know, back then. And when I said black my buddy, if you ain't had a right, you know what I mean, toy or black my buddy, like you was looked upon as a certain person or a certain kid.
Yeah.
Right? So even the thought of that is being a storyteller. Like I'm able to get this, I'm able to have my story around this black my buddy that you don't have. Right, because you don't see the vision. You laughing at me, right? Because y'all got the white, you know, my buddy, and I got the black. And I know I'm cool.
Was a black my buddy,
yo, bro.
Though,
I know I'm cool, but I'm only saying that. I know the black my buddy things don't go somewhere after this, but I'm only saying that because when you asked a very specific question of who was Mello,
yeah.
who was Cello at that moment of 7, 8 years old,
yeah.
This is the things I was into.
Mm-hmm.
Climbing up the window, trying to see my brother play outside and trying to understand what's going on, why I can't go outside. That's yeah. big bro playing, why I can't go outside. Not understanding the environment.
Right, the community, right.
Right, yeah. So it was like a lot of things as a kid, man.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. People don't always realize just how much their negative thoughts and experiences stick with them and weigh them down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings. That frustrating thing your mom does. Or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger, talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapist anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Wade today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Wade.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
At that time, what music did you gravitate towards? Not, you know, I'm sure you heard a lot of things because you had older siblings, and so you had to listen to what they listened to, but what music did you gravitate towards? What artist was that that spoke to you?
To me, it was like at the time where I can really understand the impact that a lyric is having. It was Rakim. My brother used to play Rakim. It was Biz Markie. You know what I'm saying? Like, Biz was heavy in my household. So I always understood, kind of had the sound of music just based off of, you know, those type of artists. They wasn't like everybody else. So I gravitated towards those type of artists. But as I got to Baltimore, it was more like, you know, some of them, like, it was Purple Tape. Like, it was, you know what I mean? It was Wu-Tang.
What's Purple Tape?
No, I mean, so the Raekwon, no, about, listen, we used to call it a purple, they came in a Purple Tape, cassette tape.
Okay, okay.
So we used to call it the Purple Tape. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's some
New York, some New York shit. Nah, but it was, you know, we used to call it the Purple Tape, though. So, you know, that was only built for Cuban Links, right? So it was like I grew up on that type of music. That was like the music. That was like my soundtrack to my background, my backdrop. Yeah. I was hearing as a kid everything that I was dealing with.
Yeah. They were speaking right to you.
They were speaking directly
right,
to me.
Right, to what you seen, what you experienced. Man, they were speaking
like,
it.
All that I got is you. Like, you know what I'm saying? That song was like played over and over and over. Like, watching that video when they in the projects and 7 a.m. plucking roaches out the cereal box. It's like, I could have had a big ass cockroach come out this cereal box out here. You know, so you relate to what you're seeing. So that was like my backdrop.
Yeah.
You know, Ghostface, Raekwon, Wu-Tang, and Nas, like at early Nas.
You know, it's a lot of people, even in my life today, that when we share stories like that, right, cockroaches coming out of the cereal box, they don't understand that we live that life.
Yeah, that's
you know what I mean? Like, literally, cockroaches coming out of the cereal box. That was the life we lived, roaches. Whatever you had in your community, they came out of everywhere.
They was friends. They came out of You know what I mean? You see them, yo, what's up? You know what I mean?
Bro, my dad used to snatch them things off the wall like it was nothing.
I hated them, but, you know, I hated them things, but we ain't had no choice.
So those individuals that, you know, that you listened to were storytellers. Once again,
all
right?
Storytellers.
They told stories that you can identify with, that made you feel seen, that made you feel like you weren't alone, right? Mm-hmm. Which is important, right? We understand with kids, if you don't see something or someone that's doing something or doing a certain act the way that you do them or you've seen them, then it feels foreign. Mm-hmm. But these artists are telling your story straight to you. You like, yeah, I got Cairo just coming out of the cereal box.
They speaking
to you.
Like, to that point, like, I was used, like, music, when you talking about music and what music was doing for me, like, you know me personally. Like, I need music. You know what I'm saying? I need anything I do, I need music. It's I'm just the moods of mellow. Like, it's
Coin that, the moods of mellow.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Keep that in the pocket.
Coin that.
But you know, I was just always, you know, my mom was soulful. My uncles and aunts, they were soulful. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
9, 10, 11, 12 people in 3 bedrooms, you get so much information as a kid. So you start gravitating to sound. You start gravitating to who don't like what, you know, as a family, what we like, what we don't like. So you take all of that. So by the time I got to 92, 93, 94, that only Built for Cuban Links was my backdrop. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm actually understanding it mm-hmm. better now. It's like, man, you know, I went through that. So I wanted to be them. I wanted to be Nas, not, you know, be like Nas as a kid. Like, damn, because he talking to me as a kid.
Yeah.
But I wanted to, they inspired me as a kid. I didn't want to be them. Like, I was smart enough because I grew up with uncles and aunts who really held things down. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Had morals and standards and stood tall on their square. So I never wanted to follow nobody.
Yeah.
It was just, I would take little pieces of information and, oh, shit, I see how he moving. I see how he talking. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. What's making it work and what's not?
One of my, I mean, I've probably shared this with you before, but one of my favorite moments, even over our 20 years of relationship that we've had, was connecting over music. I don't know if you remember this moment. We were on vacation
mm-hmm.
and you played the most Jadakiss I've ever listened to in my life. But we set up, we had some wine.
Yep.
We set up for hours as you and you played me music from your upbringing, from your community, from your hood. And I got a chance through that music to understand my friend a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
And music speak to you,
music
man.
Music spoke to me. And I can see your expressions and see what you were, when that music hit, you'd be like, oh, listen to this, listen to this. And I was sitting there listening, and I got a chance through the music of, you know, a lot of the, you know, Fabulous and, you know, all the things that you had. You had me listening to some Fabulous that I ain't never heard, some Kiss I ain't never heard.
We had the mixtapes. It was the mixtape.
We were going deep into the New York bag.
It was cool, though, you know, because we was learning each other, like, yeah. You know what I mean? So it ain't like we knew everything about each other. Like,
right.
Now we could talk 30 years of experience, 20 years of experience. Like, then we was dealing with little pockets
right.
of each other. So at that moment, it was the energy, it was the environment that we was in, that it was a no judgment zone, mm-hmm. right? And we was all filling each other out. Like, you know what I'm saying? As far as like, what are the likes of each person? You know, we still sizing each other up in a wonderful way as far as like, oh, what do he like? What yeah. he like, what he don't like, what is he into, what he not into. We know certain tidbits about each other, but that I think that moment was a very critical moment in the growth of a friendship.
Yeah.
Because music was like, at that point, we was vibing. Like, we were just on that vibe. We had no, again.
First of all, we couldn't go nowhere.
We couldn't go nowhere. It's like, middle of the water is just the vibe
yeah.
that you ask for. You know yeah. what I'm saying? And so I think the music also enhanced. You know what I mean? The backdrop enhanced the music enhanced yeah. our conversation and that energy.
If someone is asking me in an interview about you, I always go back to that moment because, you know, when you compete against someone and, you know, obviously we're friends, you know, we get to see each other when we play each other or we get to talk or we get to, you know, see each other all-star games, but you ain't really getting yeah. in-depth
yeah.
relationship building. And at that moment, through that bonding, we bonded. And also, too, I don't know if you remember, that was the first time where I talked about my intro, when I was getting into the wine industry.
Mm-hmm. What year was that? Where we was at?
It was 2014. It was like 2014, 20. It was somewhere around that time. I was just getting into the wine industry. And
it was, New York? Was it New York All-Star Weekend?
That was 2015. But when we were on a vacation, I was just getting into the wine industry.
Okay, okay. So it's coming back. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember. Okay. Actually, I had some of my wine that I poured. Poured for you.
Snuck that in, champ?
Yeah, I snuck it in at the time. Now, I didn't tell y'all that
little
I was
blind
in it.
Tasted it all.
I just had a little something. And I was just trying to see what y'all thought about it or whatever the case would be because it was me, UCP, and Brian. And
yeah.
We just all drinking wine one day.
Yeah.
I poured some wines that I had brought.
That's dope. That's the way you do it.
Yeah, yeah, just to see.
That's the way, but that's the way you do it. Like, I'm doing it that way. You know what I'm saying? I'm here.
Yeah, you know, it was early on.
I love that. I love that.
All right.
Damn, memories. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's always perspectives and stories and storytelling.
Yeah, I mean, because it was important for me, even like I was entering this industry of wine, which we both are in, which we'll get to a little later. But it was important for me that, like, you know my journey. You were there in the beginning when I didn't drink.
Yeah, hell no, he ain't drink.
Right? I ain't even drink. And so it was important for me that, like, I was like, I don't want to see what Mello face look like.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I don't really know what I like yet. I'm just entering this industry.
Yeah, and it's so crazy. It's crazy. The flip side of so the flip side of that story, while you don't know what you like, right? I only know what I like, right? Yeah. Meaning I wasn't as open to exploring other vineyards and regions and grapes, and I didn't want to. I was so, like, avid on, I gotta have a first growth Bordeaux. I got to. Like, I'm not drinking nothing else. So I got stuck in that first growth Bordeaux New York mindset.
And everybody was like, oh, I'm like this.
Yeah, so it wasn't that. It was just like I wasn't introduced to anything else. Like, it was like once I went from, you know, Cali, Napa to first growths on my journey, like, damn, I'm not doing nothing else. So I was on that journey at the same time you was on that journey.
Yeah.
So
that's cool.
It's crazy.
That's dope. You know, so being a kid, man, and I think we all know that pivotal moment in our life when we looked at that ball and we was like, I love that ball. I want to do this for the rest of my life. You're not thinking that at that time, but you know when you're going to sleep, you thinking about it. When you're waking up, you're thinking about it. When you're in class, you're thinking about it. What point in your life do you remember early on where basketball became, like, the thing that brought you your confidence, the thing that brought you joy in the midst of the chaos of growing up in the jungle?
High school.
So it was at high school.
It was high school. When I was, baseball was my first love.
Okay, there we go.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
What? Talk to me about baseball.
I just love baseball. You know, maybe it's the Puerto Rican gene. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I just love baseball. And when I was in Red Hook, we had a court right outside the window of the projects. Right. So, yeah, I love, you know, I love playing basketball. I love going out there on the court. I love watching my brothers and family play and friends play, and I love playing on the monkey bars and jumping off the, you know, imitating, being a kid. Yeah. But I didn't know it. I just knew it was an activity. When I got to Baltimore and I got a chance to play Little League baseball, baseball and football season, I could play football, and, oh, basketball, I can play basketball too. It was like basketball was like third on the list at that point, but I can play it.
Yeah,
I just had something about it, a different style of game that they were seeing down there in Baltimore, right? So I bought that New York flash and that, you know what I mean? That grit, that toughness down there to where I was at, on top of the grit and toughness that was already there.
Right, I was going to say that. What is Be More Basketball?
Be More Basketball is as tough as it come. Grit, tough, get to it.
Did y'all play 21? Like, what was
y'all
getting?
We played 21. Okay. We played 50.
Ooh.
You know what I'm saying? We played 101. We played, you know, you drive around somebody and you calling them out. Yo, me, bet it. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was the culture.
Yeah.
This neighborhood got they basketball player. We got our basketball. You know what I mean? Let's go play. And a lot of that happened outside. It didn't happen in the rec center.
No.
So I was intrigued by that part of the game.
Okay.
Getting to it. I knew how to get to it as a kid. I knew I had to fight. I knew I got to push somebody into the fence. When I score, I got to, you know what I mean? Like, it was like, you got to exert that energy as a kid. You learn that as a kid.
Right.
So in Baltimore, coming from New York with that flashiness and, you know, I didn't know what the hell I was doing at 9 years old. But when you get down there, it's like, oh, I can take my toughness on top of this grittiness and this environment that I'm in, oh, this is a win-win situation for me. So I had that mentality young. But baseball was like, I'm playing baseball.
What
I remember just, I was first base.
So you played first base. Were you a hitter? Were you a home run hitter? Talk to me about what kind of batter you were.
I was the basketball, the baseball version of me as a basketball player.
Oh, so you went for it?
Yeah, I was going. It wasn't fun if I wasn't, you know what I mean? Yeah, like, I was young. I was young, so it wasn't fun for me to get it to second base. Like, nah, I'm going.
Yeah.
But now I say that I love baseball because I really was excited about baseball.
Yeah.
Right? I was excited about doing the essays, to pass the essays so you can go play on the, you know, play, make the team and doing your book reports. And I was excited about that. I wasn't excited like that about basketball.
Now, we know baseball is, especially growing up, a white sport.
Yeah.
In B-more, when you was playing baseball.
Nah. So the Latino side.
Okay.
Is what we know. You understand? The Puerto Rican side is what we know. That's
right,
baseball.
Right, because in America,
you know what I mean? That's baseball. And even in New York, it was baseball. Like, it was, you know, hitting rocks and, you know, playing T-ball and, you know, baseball in the streets, you know, and every car is a base. you know what I mean? Like, yeah. this was the sport that we had to
figure. Definitely every car is a base.
You know what I'm saying? We had to figure it out, but, you know, home base was somebody's stoop. So, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
These are things that I remember vividly. You know, so when I got to Baltimore, I had a rec center where I can do all of these things. I can go right after school. I can sign up for baseball, basketball, football. They had a soccer team. Hell yeah, I'm signing up for soccer. I get to get out the hood. I get to get out my block.
So
yeah,
it's more Latinos in
No, no, it's no it's, Latinos. No Puerto Ricans. No, I was a sore thumb in Baltimore. Okay. I'm coming there as a little Puerto Rican.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm looking Puerto Rican. You know what I mean? They looking at me like, oh, he's a Puerto Rican. And they're from New York. Oh, shit, like, little New York, you know what I mean? So I had to fit in. I had to find a way to fit in. I have no friends. I moved in there in the summer of 92, in June of 92. It was the worst summer Baltimore has ever had in my neighborhood.
In what way?
Killings, drugs, homicides, everything.
And that was better than Red Hook.
And it was... It was like, at least Red Hook, you was in a building. Like, you was in one building. You know what I mean? You had six floors in the building, so everybody. Baltimore was like, whew. But it was community. I learned what it meant to stand with your community and honor your community and represent those stripes of your community. I learned that. Even though it was rough, it was whatever happened, you're immune to that. Some of that stuff you just be immune to.
So, growing up that way, is your mentality at this time when it comes to basketball is it's an individual mentality. Like, we know now as we sit here, basketball is a team sport. But early on.
Today?
Oh. But more so like to win and to okay. do the things that people yes, say that is five is other players out there. But did you have a mentality like, I got to go get it? And it was it more the individual mentality, or was it like, oh, I'm gonna pass and I'm going to get this guy a shot? Or was you like, I'm going to get this bucket?
Nah, I just had an understanding of who I was, right, as a kid, and what I can do. I know I can score. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I knew that. Like, I, 8, 9, 10 years old, I knew I can score. I'm going to get a bucket some way, somehow. If I got to hang court, I'm going to get a bucket.
Right.
So that came from playing as I got older outside, because you have to do whatever you have to do to win that one-on-one game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what you got to do. Back down, foul, hit, bully. I got to get this bucket.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my mentality. So when I went to play on a team sport, that was what I was known for. Being tough, being a bully, being strong. You know what I mean? Hanging court, trying to get easy back. You know what I mean? Shit like just he want a bucket. Because I knew that win games at that age. You know what I'm saying? Because right. That's my mentality that I had. Outside playing, one-on-one, 5-on-5, 2-on-2, under the lights, on the crates, you have to get a bucket. And that always stuck with me. Go get a bucket.
What about the other side? What about the defensive side?
It was more pride of it.
It's just like someone not scoring on you.
It was like I got too much pride. Like, I can't go back to the block and he talking about he, you know what I mean? Because then that conversation leads to other things. Yeah. You get what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's like, no.
Oh, yeah.
No. And I also know what I'm representing behind me.
Okay.
My community, my neighborhood, my block. guys, you know, I'm representing something bigger than me.
Yeah.
So even as a kid, I did whatever I had to do. It wasn't about just scoring. It was like, I got to do what I got to do to win this game.
Okay.
If it's out there, I got to, you know, go rebound. I got to go.
Whatever,
I gotta,
whatever it
is, at that age, you got to go get it. Whether you need six, I got to go get 12 rebounds. You got to go get 12.
Yeah.
To win the game. So I always had that, like, the fear of, like, losing. Or not fail. I don't want to say failure. Just, like, losing and somebody, like, man, nigga suck. You know what I mean? I had that as a kid, man.
Yeah.
You know, so you build this mentality, this mindset of just, like, a no-bullshit mindset. And any situation that you're in, you have to go get it.
So you have Brooklyn, Red Hooks, you have B-More, but you also got this Puerto Rican side of you, Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Tell me about how
that's an
that
interesting
played,
story.
Right. How did that play into this whole young Melo?
That's an interesting story. So my dad passed when I was 2. I remember going to a funeral. I don't remember, you know, nothing. I just remember being at a funeral. And as I got older, my sisters on my dad's side always took care of me. You know, I went back and seen them. I was my older sister.
In Puerto Rico?
No, they was in New York.
They were in New York, okay.
Yeah, my family was in New York.
Okay.
Right? So I would go to Queens. I would go to, Bed-Stuy. My, you know, sister was over there. My grandmom on that side was in Bed-Stuy. In Bushwick, in Brooklyn. So I have family on the Puerto Rican side,
yeah,
all over Brooklyn. So I would go stay over there and spend time with my sister and nieces and nephews and things like that. You know, I was into that side. I didn't understand it. I just knew this is fun. Like, I come on my sister, I get to hang with my nephew. You know, sis taking care of me. I can get away from Red Hook.
Right.
Right? So I had that duality, that, you know, both sides of that. So as I got older, and it wasn't until high school when I went to Puerto Rico and they wanted me to play on the junior national team, represent Puerto Rico. Mm. I knew I was Puerto Rican.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know the ties, and I knew my dad was Puerto Rican. I didn't know how deep it goes.
Right.
And honestly, like, that was a moment of, like, I have to go figure this out. I got to start asking questions, because now I'm in this as a this void of, like, not having a dad, right? It's like, damn, like, I'm about to make it to the NBA. Like, dad ain't, you know, this thing ain't here. Like, I wish he was here. I wish my cousin. You start having all of these moments. I'm doing it for him. And I started to kind of like search, man, what my dad was into. Like, everywhere I would go in Brooklyn, they were like, yo, your dad, you act just like your dad.
Mm-hmm.
You walk like your dad. You talk like your dad. Like, you pop shit. Like it's like your whole aura is your dad. Yeah, I'm dad. Like, yo, what was my, what he was doing?
Right.
I hope he wasn't no sucker. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I hope he wasn't no sucker, man, please. But you hear all these stories, man, of just like, yo, your dad, man, Curly. My dad's name was Curly. I called my dad Curly.
Okay.
Curly. And even like when I got this excuse, my dad was locked up upstate for a while. He's calling him Mr. Wonderful, right? He was average, scored like 50-something points upstate in the jail. So he was known as Fly Puerto Rican Fro. You know, classy, you know what I mean?
Tall dude.
Tall, 6'6", 6'5", 6'6". But he hung with the blacks. So it was always that connection, black Puerto Ricans. I always knew that connection.
Okay.
So as I'm on this road of discovery, La gives me a picture for Christmas. And I'm in Denver, and it's a painting. And on the painting, it's me as a kid. It's my dad. But he like in the jail pose, white beater on, red bandana, beret.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, oh, other pictures I've seen, he got the black trench leather coat on. You know, he got the camel leather coat on, trench coat. Like, he's turtlenecks, you know what I mean?
Fly. Yeah.
And I'm like, nah, this was everyday attire for him. That's something different. That's looking too powerful. What is that? And as I started to discover, I realized, okay, My dad was a young lord, right? But young lords are really basically the Puerto Rican version side Black Panthers.
Black Panther.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's the version of the Black Panthers, whoever, depending on who you actually ask. But yeah, that was it, yeah. Right? So I started digging deep into who was it, what is a young lord? Oh, they look fly. So you start going, now I can use the internet. Now I start pulling up pictures and researching, like, oh, he's fly. Like, that's where I get it from. It makes sense. That's my revolution.
So you did
that's
your
my
own
revolutionary
discovery.
Arm.
Yeah.
Seeing that. And, right. And now I'm going, now I can talk intellectually with the guys and the people, yeah. And the women. Sitting down with them, going to Spanish Harlem and Brooklyn, and to sitting down and talking to the original young lords.
Yeah.
And they're telling me stories. And as they're telling me stories, it's just like.
So you got your stories about your dad, not from your mom sitting there telling you.
Nah,
you got it from.
My mom told me, and this is probably the realest shit she ever told me. When you ready, I'm ready. Mm. You ain't ready yet, though. I mean, I ain't ready, man. What? All right, man, you on that?
Why you bugging?
Come on, man, I'm out, man. I'm being too long, man. But nah, she told me that, like, when you're ready, and you know, she said, you going to know when you're ready.
Yeah.
When you're ready, I'll be ready. It took a while.
Yo, so I'm sitting here, and I'm thinking how awful 2004 Olympic loss to Puerto Rico. Had to feel for
when you ready. I'll be ready.
I didn't even think about that. Losing to Puerto Rico in the Olympics in 2004.
It's all about being objective, man. It's that was.
Oh man!
Now you see the stories that I'm telling you is adding up to the moment of. Don't ask me. I didn't play. In 2004 against Puerto Rico.
Oh yeah. Well, I know about that. Yeah,
but
I
mean, the whole world heard about stories that, right? Leading up to that,
right?
Nobody knows.
Wow,
right?
Yes, you're right.
It's like, yo, like I should have played with them.
Right,
I should have played with Puerto Rico. Yeah, and then
I'm over here not
playing. I left PR. I just was in PR. I left Puerto Rico.
Mm.
About to say, yay,
mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, I realized that. I plan on being in this league for a long time. USAB is the pinnacle of this. So at the time, Puerto Rico basketball wasn't, they was good at great players, had good players on the island, but it was like, I want USA basketball at that moment. It's the prestige.
Yeah,
it's
the highest honor.
At that point.
At that time, yeah.
At the time. It wasn't where we put it at.
You
understand? So I'm going to break it down to you from my perspective, right? 2004, I was going to play with Puerto Rico. Bay. Just think about it. Yo, you ain't going to never be able to play with
USAB.
All right, cool. All right, boom. Right after that, I get the call for 2004 Olympics.
Yep. Because all the players opted out.
Everybody opted out. So this is telling you where USAB was at that point in time. Everybody opted out.
Mm-hmm.
All the top dogs opted out.
Yep.
It was only a couple of people left. They call us.
Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah, I'm playing. That mindset of I'm going to get to it. I'm playing the Olympics. I'm going to get to it. I don't care. I don't care who out there. I'm going to get. This is my mentality. Like, yeah. Hey, I get to play USA basketball Olympics after my first year in the NBA. Damn, okay. Like, this is what it is. Like, yeah. I can establish myself. This is dream team. And we go play that game in 04, get the shit beat out of us, and the rest is history.
The rest is history.
You know, and as it, because I'm not playing, I'm seeing this, the slow death, like, it's just unraveling. Puerto Rico is getting louder. And louder and louder and louder and louder. And the game just start opening up.
Oh, man, you're starting to make so much more sense to me now.
I thought you was just pissed that you weren't playing because you were that guy.
Bro, like, I was
20-point score as a
rookie.
Bro,
this is why I don't speak. You understand? This is it's a time for everything. But no, I wasn't pissed off because I wanted to play. I knew what I was up against.
Right.
But I also was a little bit tight because we were killing on the exhibition.
Right.
The young guns.
We were hooping. Yeah.
So when we get to the Olympics, in my mind, I'm like, oh, this is our role on the team.
Come in, bring the energy.
If we down, bring it back up. If we up, keep it up.
Yeah.
That was my mentality. And then it's like we get to match up with Puerto Rico. So like, damn, like I'm about to play. That's the team I'm about to play with. Yo, we got to get them. Like, I've got to play today.
Shout out to Carlos World.
Shout out to Carlos World, man. I have to play in this game. And then you don't play.
Okay.
And then you at the end, you get caught as a 19, 20-year-old. Yo, what do you think about the Puerto Rico? Shout out to Puerto Rico. Shout out to Puerto Rico. Yeah, like I'm not about to say nothing bad about Puerto Rico. Yeah. Yeah, shout out to Puerto Rico. Hell, that was a great game by Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
What do you, I don't know. Don't ask me.
I wasn't in there.
Don't ask me.
Yeah.
But I wasn't saying it like disrespectful. I was just saying it like a teenager would say it.
Right.
I don't know, man. Go, they're like, I ain't play. Go ask him.
It's the image. It's the no shirt on.
No, it was crazy.
Did you have the backwards head on?
It was crazy, man. It was the image that they put out there and on the sideline. I know that image. I have that image in my crib. Just on the sideline. I look at it every time. Like, that's where this shit started.
Really?
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity. It's designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals to help cover unexpected expenses, plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. In other words, it's like getting a paycheck for life. We'll say that again. A paycheck for life. Guaranteed. Sounds too good to be true? It's not. It's the Parity Flex annuity. And it's one more example of their commitment to creating a better financial future for women. One where they feel empowered, not excluded, and ready to take on whatever their next chapter holds. Gainbridge believes financial flexibility and security are things we all could use more of. At retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Who's with us? Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, for product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
So stand on that same wavelength mm-hmm. of your father.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about fatherhood, right?
Facts.
And so I know as we, you know how we are, man, we... Whether we're raised by our father or we're not raised by our father, we always want to be better, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to do it different. I'm going to do this. I'm going to be a better father, whatever the case may be. So how did you approach early fatherhood when it came to being a young parent
yeah.
with Cayenne?
Yeah. I didn't know. I looked at it as, yo, dang, I got my son. Like, you know what I mean? Like, dang, I got a son. Like, we're going to have fun together.
Yeah.
I was projecting what I was missing, meaning not having my dad around at two and growing up in Baltimore, Red Hook. I'm projecting shit that I used to say, like, damn, man, wish my dad could see this.
Yeah.
Yeah, this game. I wonder what my dad would have did. You know what I mean? He'd have came outside and seen me fighting. Like, you know what I mean? Like, little things like, my daddy never teach me how to ride a bike. Like, those things is like, damn, as you get older. So when Kai came, it's like, holy shit, I get to do this all over again. Like, you about to ride a bike at 3 months. you know, that was the actual excitement. Like, it was more like a little brother to me at that point in time, because I was always the little brother. Mm-hmm. And I always craved for a brother, like not a younger brother. Like, damn, right. I wish I had a younger brother that I can be a big brother to. So when Kai came, I was still in that, like, damn, man, I'm going to take all the game. I'm taking them over here. We're going to do this, and I'm going to dress them like this. And I'm taking, like, all the things that you wanted to do.
He was your black my buddy.
He was my black my, and I, yo, but that's so real, right, when you really put it into perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It was a void of, it was something that I was wanting, that I was needing, that I was yearning, which was the my buddy to be around, to have, he was my little brother. Now that I put the knowledge to everything, it's like, that was my little brother. That was the part I was yearning. So I felt good with the black my buddy. With Kai, it was the same. He was my black my buddy at that point in time.
Yeah.
And then that's a true fact. And I carried it like that. He going everywhere with me. It's my son. This is my number. It's my firstborn. This is seed. This is me.
Yeah. I'm going to do what I didn't have with my dad. I'm going to do it all. I'm going to do everything
what?
I didn't have.
We going to haunted house? I ain't never been to haunted house. Going on? Yeah, hell yeah, we going to haunted house. You want to go to three? Come on. It's whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it became, I was able to have some type of standards and morals that he can look up to as a little kid growing up. One, two, even though he probably didn't understand it, he saw.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, wake up, boom, here, boom, there, like, he's going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So as he get older, he understand, all right, dad, you going to work. Like, all right, go get to it. I get it. You start having that type of rapport with him. You start having that type of rapport with him to the point where now it's like we could sit here just like this and have that rapport.
Right.
And you would still be my son, but I also feel like that void is filled.
Yeah.
Of the black my buddy.
Yeah.
Because I got
you.
You know what I'm saying? I got you. That void is filled. That's real.
I know about it. Obviously, I had Zaire when I was 19, 20 years old. Let's go to hoop, bro. So now, high school was when you started having, when you was in B-more.
Yeah.
In high school.
Yeah.
What made you leave B-more and go to Oak Hill? How did that, what happened there?
Force. I was forced out. You gotta get out of B-more. You gotta go.
Oh, okay.
You gotta
that
go.
Kind of forced out.
You gotta go. Ain't no, you gotta go. Don't even play around with this.
Yeah.
I'm not going nowhere. I was hiding the day they came to get me to drive me to Oak Hill and my man Crib in the P's, like in the projects, like, yo, you bet not answer the phone. Don't somebody come to the door, you haven't seen me. I'm not going to Oak Hill, bro. I'm not going to Oak Hill.
Why Oak Hill?
So let me go back to your question, though. So it was a point in time. So I went to high school at Towson Catholic. You know, got to get to school, however way you got to get to school. 2 hours, 1 hour and a half, train, subway, whatever. Cabs, people on the block, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I was always late because of...
You move a little slow, though, bro. You know.
Yeah, I do. I do.
You a little mellow.
I do. So imagine 6 a.m., 6:30 mellow. It's like at that age. But now I couldn't be slow because I had to meet my times. I had to, this bus is based off of this train. It's based off
of this. Connect,
yeah, so you got to be you got to be on it. So every time I was just always like walk in the door, time, boom, as soon as I step foot, the bell ring. All right, cool. I ain't late. Go to class. But I wound up, my transcript started being crazy because I was enrolled in two schools. coming out of eighth grade, I was going to another high school with my man Kenny Miner, right? So he was going to Dunbar High School, which was the prestige high school, one of the powerhouses of high school basketball.
Yep.
I was going to go there. I was enrolled in Dunbar High School. Me and my best friend, we go, boom, boom, boom. We the only two from West Baltimore going to school in East Baltimore. It was just like, what are we doing? But anyway, as I'm going to school, stepping foot into the classes at sometimes, like 2 weeks into school, I get Towson Catholic saying the financial aid goes through. So now I can go to Towson Catholic. Originally, I wanted to go to Towson Catholic. Right. That's the Catholic League, the best thing. And you know what I mean? Like Catholic League is
big. But you couldn't get in at first.
I had to wait for financial aid, which is a whole other story. I never even knew my mom was paying to finance. You get what I'm saying? Like this, I thought I had a scholarship. Cool. That's a whole other beef I got with that. So I'm like, oh, cool, Towson Catholic. I'm going. Like I boogie. I just go to Towson Catholic. I don't unenrolled, if that's a word. I didn't unenroll from is that a word? Unenrolled or something?
Unenrolled.
Like, I didn't unenroll. You know what I mean?
It's a word on this podcast.
All right, unenrolled. I didn't unenroll from Dunbar. So my transcript never was closed on that side. Mm. So by the time I got to my junior year, number one player, it was, what am I going to do next year? You can't come back here. You can't come back. You caused it too much trouble. You caused it too many problems. Bringing too much attention to the Catholic, to the, you know what I mean, to the archdiocese is like, nah. You don't want to cut your hair. You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, I'm dealing with all of this.
Yeah.
I had detentions because it wasn't I was like bad. It was my tie wasn't straight. My hair was a certain length. I could wear this type of boot, but I can't wear that. Like, you know what I mean? So they was really like.
You was on your first Prince of Bel-Air.
They was picking with me. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? They was really picking with me. And they used to give me detentions, and I used to get detentions and add on. So after the school year, my junior year, they told me I had to make my detentions up. I got to come down summertime. Now, right? Mm. Deep in summer. Now I got to get back up there. I never want to come back up here in the summertime, 2 hours, get on the train. I don't got no ride up there. And you want me to come do detentions. So I said, you know what? I'm going to go up there, do like 2-3 days. We sitting there clapping chalk, you know, chalk powder and shit like that, washing the desk. And so I'm not doing this no more, man. This is crazy. Just to get my transcript, just to pass and go to my senior year, you bugging. Just kicked me out. My transcript was so bad because I was enrolled at Dunbar High School. So I couldn't get my transcript. I had to go to summer school. I had to go to night school that summer before I went to Oak Hill to get my grades up.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm in Lean On Me, like the movie Lean On
Me.
Yeah,
you know
night school. I'm coming through in the craziest high school in Baltimore City, Frederick Douglass High School.
At night.
From 4 to 7. Anything and everything you can imagine is happening at night school. But I'm cool. I got to do it. I got to get my grades. My transcript is messed up. So I did all of that to go back to Towson Catholic for them to tell me I can't come back.
Mm.
So at that point, it was like, oh, fuck y'all. I'm going back to Dunbar. We're going to be the top dogs. And now I'm who I am.
You're the number one player at this time.
Like in the state, though.
In the state,
like
right.
So, the state is mine at this point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The city and state is mine. Me and my man Kenny, we running the whole city at this point in time. So, I get a call. I had committed to Syracuse my junior year on my birthday. That was like my birthday gift to me. I committed. That summer happens. Somebody calls and say, "Yo, you getting out of Baltimore?"
Not the somebody called. Somebody called.
Somebody called. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if he really want me to.
Yeah, no,
you know
no,
I mean?
No.
Say,
please.
Nah, I ain't really big on names.
I like the somebody called.
Somebody called and was like, "Yo, you going to Oak Hill. You getting the fuck out of Baltimore. Like, you bet not go to Dunbar. You can't spend your senior year in Baltimore.
At Dunbar, yeah.
You can't.
Wow.
It's impossible. You already on that path of
right.
Going left, like, no, we getting you the fuck out of Baltimore. And he had a real conversation with me. Yo, if you don't go, man, like, you really putting a lot of things at jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. Yeah, all right, man. Like, I'm sitting outside on my steps on my block. Man, all right, cool, man. Yeah, all right, man, whatever. Yo, Kenny, look, they call you, don't answer. They come to the crib, don't answer. You ain't see me in a couple days. I'm not going to Oak Hill, bro. I went down there, like, let's go down there to visit. Go down there to visit. We drove down there in the middle of the night. Let me out. They peeled off. Left me at Oak Hill. And the rest is history. I called my mom. Yo, Ma, I don't know where I'm at. Please send me a bus ticket. Send me the Greyhound ticket. When you there, son, like, don't call me, man. Like, figure it out.
That's how Melo got to Oak Hill.
That's how I got to Oak Hill. That's the Oak Hill story.
Wow.
Yeah, so I had to do summer school at Oak Hill, so I couldn't go to no camps. My junior year going to that summer, in between junior and senior, I had to get my grades right.
Okay.
So I had to go to, that's why Sonny Vaccaro allowed me to go to Adidas, and I was at a Jordan school. Because
facts.
Nike had me on the waiting list, on the honorable mention, or waiting, whatever it was back then, in the waiting list.
To go to Nike camp.
To go to Nike camp. Bruh.
You still feel a way about that. I just seen it in your face.
Yeah, bro. Like, what? What? All right, cool. So I'm mad I can't go to camps that summer. I'm just mad because I'm missing Nike.
You want to go hoop. And you want the best.
Or I can't go to Adidas, ABCD, because I'm at Oak Hill, which is a Jordan school. So it's like, can't do that. I'm missing Eastern Invitational. I'm missing Five Star. I'm missing like the...
Yeah.
This is my summer, senior year. And I'm sitting at Oak Hill and trees and woods and cows and like, nah, this ain't life, bro.
So at this point, so your junior year, all right, now you're the number one player in the state. Is NBA...
Never.
Like, never. Why not?
Never.
I've heard you say this so many times.
Never.
Why not?
Never.
It just seemed too far-fetched.
It was NBA to me was like the Wiz, like the Wizard of Oz. Like, it was like, no, that's impossible to make it. Like, you get so hammered down and you would never make it. You would never make it. You would never make it. Statistics, yeah, yeah. Right? You become a one out of every 5,000. Yep. Like, you hear
million.
That. Bro, you hear that. I was saying that since eighth grade. So cancel them basketball dreams and cancel them NBA dreams.
You're not gonna make it. Cancel your dreams.
They not coming to West Baltimore, to Myrtle Avenue to come get you. So get that dream out your head. Like, go be a cop.
Even though
go be
nice.
A fireman.
Even
go be
though
a,
nice.
Man, them dreams is washed. They kill your dreams before you even have a chance to dream. That's real. And we don't even know that. We just, oh, that's tough. Be tough. Be tough. No, you constantly tell somebody, man, you ain't gonna make it. You ain't gonna make it. You ain't gonna make it. You ain't gonna make it.
Yeah.
Stop thinking like that. You a killer kid.
Yeah.
And you get what I'm saying? So you become immune to, I'm not gonna make it. Damn, right. Yeah, you're right. Like, oh, and then you start seeing stories of how hard it was for guys to make it to the NBA in videos. Like, man, I can't do that. That's impossible.
It's different today. Every kid think they're going to make it.
Right. So
every
for me, it was like,
think they gonna make
and
it
I
today.
Think it was a fleeing thing for me, like, just to kind of like, I ain't going to make it. So let me stop thinking about that. All right, cool. I'm moving on to something else. Like, block that out because of those statistics and just the people saying that you ain't going to do shit. Like, you ain't going to be nothing. Biggie was right, man. You ever sling a crack rock or you got a wicked jump shot?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Your teachers is telling you. You hear these from your teachers. These are the leaders. These are the educators. The scholars is telling you, boy, put that ball down.
So do you understand why they were saying that? Or do you feel like they shouldn't say that, period, to kids? Do you understand?
I understand why they say it.
Now.
Now. But you still don't say it.
Right, the way that they said and
listen,
how they
right
said
it. Right is right, wrong is wrong, but right was wrong. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And in those cases, like, you got to encourage kids. Like, if that's your dream,
right?
Boom.
Then this is what you need. I'm going to do my part
as a leader, as a scholar, as an educator
to help
you get to that, not shut the door on you when they tell you to write your goals and your dreams on the little index card and you write it down. And you're
they're like,
basketball player, why NBA? Why? Get out of here.
Right.
Well, you'll be right over there in a couple, like, it's.
So That's the, well, going into the next year, I mean, I see images, I see video. And I didn't know the story beforehand, but I do know when I got introduced to Carmelo Anthony. And a lot of it was because LeBron James, right? For me, because it was these two powerhouses. And I didn't even know nothing about neither one of y'all because we're at a different time.
Yeah, of course.
But was it Oak Hill when you and Brian got introduced to each other? Or was it before Oak Hill that you knew?
So it was, I'm a year older. So right. Grade older.
Right.
We go to USA camp. It's crazy. It's the irony of I just came back from that with Cayenne. The same thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy. I'm sure you'll get to that, but that's crazy. Sitting there, and I was there in 2001 doing the same
thing. That's crazy.
The same thing. I'm sitting there like, he like, yo, Dad, why are you so serious? I'm like, you don't understand what's going on in my mind right now. But that's another story. But so we meet really at USA.
Okay.
On the invite where they invite everybody. And they break the teams down to north, east, south. You know what I mean? So,
and this is what year?
This is I want to say 01.
Okay.
2000. Okay. I want to say around 2000 or 01.
Okay.
And we there, and it's like, you just catch the energy of, in those type of environments when you're around all the players, like good players. Guys automatically gravitate towards each other without you even saying nothing. Mm-hmm. And slowly, by the time that camp is over, y'all gonna be
linked with your guy.
And slowly, we was building that.
Mm-hmm.
You get what I'm saying? We was slowly building that. We ain't know when we was building it, but it was like, he seemed cool. Like, he got good energy. Like, all right, cool. We hang out after the courts, you know, after practice, go outside at night, everybody outside. The girls' team, guys' team. We just, you know, we all there having a good time outside talking shit and playing with USA basketball. And after that, boom. It wasn't like no communication. You know, how the fuck are we going to communicate?
Right.
Like, I think you're going back to—
It's a whole different
world. You know what I mean?
You're
going back over there. I'm going back to BMO. I might not never see you again.
You're going to Ohio. You're going to BMO.
I might not never see you ever again.
Right.
But it was real. You know what I'm saying? If we do meet, it's real.
Yeah.
And go to Oak Hill. The year before I went to Oak Hill, they play Oak Hill. St. Vincent, St. Mary's play Oak Hill. They lose. St. Vincent's lose to Oak Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, if I'm not mistaken. I come the next year. So now they already got a two-year deal of playing each other this year and next year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the get back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not thinking about this is the get back for him. You know what I mean? Like, this is the second time he's playing Oak Hill. They just beat them like, oh, now the hype. I get it. So that's when we met. Like, now we, like, meet at the hotel, boom. And it's like, damn, you, me, similar situations. You going with your mom, going with my mom. Mm-hmm. Like,
some upbringing, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm telling him my story. He telling me his story. And it's like, we connected on little pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Man, little brother. Damn, yo, I wish I had a little brother too. You know what I mean? Like, it's and friend. You know, it's like, okay. And then you became interested in his story. I became interested in his story. But by the time I'm interested in his story, I got to run out on the court and play him. So it's the buildup of all of this. I'm sitting here. I'm a senior. He's a junior. So we sitting there. Then it's All-Star Weekend in Philly. I'm hype about Philly. I ain't thinking about the game. I'm hype about, yo, man, who coming to the game? Like, so how you gonna get over there? I'm the number one player, so I'm trying to get to Philly.
Right.
The hype is in Jersey. So we play, you know, the game happens, and the buildup to that was so astronomical, like, for high school basketball at that point in time. And to be honest, I had no understanding of what it was. I was just like, man, I get to play against Bron. Like, shit, this is big time.
Right.
You know
nice,
what I mean? I'm going
nice,
to hoop.
Go.
He nice.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah.
That's it. I got to get to it. That's the only thing I'm thinking, man. Yeah. He can't get best of me today. You know what I mean? Like,
Everybody. It was a game. So the game was in Jersey.
The game was in Jersey.
It was in Jersey.
Yeah, well, the primetime shootout in New Jersey, they put that game together. You know, son of a cat. You know what I mean? You know how the inner workers of all of that work. It works. You know what I mean? It's Air, the movie Air.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You already know.
I was a part of that experience on his behalf. It just so happened I was older, but a year older. I had already committed to go to Syracuse. And that was the game that was marked on the schedule for Oak Hill. That was the game. And just so happened, I was a part of that. If I wasn't there, that game would have still been marked on the schedule.
Right.
So me coming into that fold is like, now we really got some action.
You and heightened it. Like you took
we
that
got
moment
motion
to
now.
A whole other level.
Yeah, we got motion now. Oh, now this we got to put this on TV.
Yeah.
Now they TV game. ESPN. You get what I'm saying? Yeah, this is where all of that kind of started.
Was that the first TV game? Was that the first big TV game?
I want to say that, but I don't want to be, you know what I mean?
Okay.
You know, they fact checked out here now, man. But, you know, I want to say that, but I could
they
be wrong.
They keep receipts.
You got to be careful.
This convo with my brother Mello, it started to get really long. So we're going to cut off part one right here. Coming up in part two, we talk a lot about the drama surrounding his time with the Knicks, why he's still upset over our 2003 draft, and the behind-the-scenes info about why he left Syracuse.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.